Hey everybody. Lots of people ask me about patient advocacy and why I'm a patient advocate and what it is exactly that I do. Today's agenda includes a lesson, a blessing, and a challenge. And whether you're here as a patient, a loved one, or a professional, here comes some good stuff. I find that plenty of people lean in as I begin to talk about the history of our very young and exciting profession. So I'll cover a quick history lesson today. That's the lesson, along with the many things that I and patient advocates can do to assist people who are struggling. Spoiler alert, that's the blessing. Relative to the history of patient advocacy, the lesson part, the views expressed in this piece are not full of citations and references to history. Chalk it up to some folklore, albeit interesting folklore. Or maybe the world as Nancy sees it. Take what you need and leave the rest. End of disclaimer. Patient advocacy is a very young industry, and I believe that most of it stemmed from the patient rights movement of the 1970s and the Patient Bill of Rights. That was adopted by the American Hospital Association in 1973. The Patient Bill of Rights prevails today as the Patient Care Partnership. And it outlines our rights as patients when in the hospital. The very first patient advocacy, and that which you may be familiar, was itself hospital-based. First called patient representatives, they were operating in large teaching institutions that linked hospital care and medical information. Patient advocates that are hospital-based can really get things done. They do, however, work for the hospital, which might be problematic in that their voice may be bound by employer policy or paycheck. Limited. Another issue is the fact that when you're discharged, the patient advocates in the hospital stay there. And you go where? As an independent patient advocate, I can support you whether you're at home, hospital, rehab, discharge back home, or need to find a new home. I also believe that independent patient advocacy's genesis was the result of social movements in America. At first, we witnessed or took part in advocacy for a cause, the causes being the formation of disease-specific nonprofits like the American Cancer Society and the March of Dimes. These organizations were formed to educate and advocate on behalf of the patients. They shone a light on cases, research, treatment, and shifted our thought into more of a public health mode. With that, the next phase was community organizing around health hazards like the environment or in the workplace. For example, the 1978 Love Canal Homeowners Association was founded by a neighborhood that was concerned about the high rate of cancer and birth defects in their community. Research was needed to determine the cause, rectify what might be happening, and treat the people that were impacted. As for the workplace, anybody familiar with the 1980s may remember the Karen Silkwood case. Perhaps you even saw the 1983 film Silkwood, and that centered around health and safety violations in the nuclear industry and our response to worker safety. There was a shift in the 1990s when hospitals and insurance as industries were both booming. Around that time, though, we as consumers seemed to lose much of our power as patients. We had long adjusted to going somewhere, reporting to somewhere for our health care, and we became kind of patriarchal as consumers. I'm not necessarily referring to a gender issue here, but that we as patients fell into accepting or doing whatever the provider said without question, or add to that without education, conference, or discussion, perhaps. The year 2009 is when it really began for independent patient advocates, as spurred by the foundation of two of our professional organizations, AFA, the Alliance of Professional Health Advocates, and NAC, National Association of Healthcare Advocacy Consultants. These search by These organizations have search by zip code directories, and many are very grateful for those directories. They've helped countless patients and loved ones find remedy. And since then, there's a lot more ways to locate us, and I'll provide some links below this video. You can also read them if you are reading the blog version of this segment on my website or listening to it. The links will be there. Early on, and is still the case today, most patient advocates were independent practitioners, sole practitioners, separate from the hospitals. Most were formerly RNs and social workers, and I'll speak to our expansion in just a minute. There was a great deal of interest in this new field, along with the growing need. By 2010, almost two dozen entities were offering certificate programs, workshops, advanced degrees on patient or health advocacy. Sarah Lawrence was a forerunner, along with UCLA and the University of Toledo. Time went on, and in 2015, there was still no nationally recognized certification for independent patient advocates. We were relying on a code of ethics, and were held together by something called the allegiance factor, as coined by Tricia Torrey. And this is important. The allegiance factor explains that allegiance is based on who's producing the paycheck. Independent patient advocates are paid directly by the patient or the patient's caregiver, and we have only one allegiance, to the patient. The patient's needs, whether those are medical or navigational or financial or locational, are the prime concern for patient advocates, period. Be wary, be aware that you're sometimes considered free advocate or cancer navigator or even insurance care manager might have a bias or a limit to their voice based upon where their paycheck is coming from. Just be aware. Think like this, follow the money from a paycheck or who is funding that organization. Think like that. Now, as an exploding profession, we were moving toward developing a certification to support our ethical standards and best practices. As you might imagine, it takes a while to develop a certification exam. That too is a process. But March of 2018 saw the first cohort of independent patient advocates passed the exam to earn the BCPA, Board Certified Patient Advocate. Now I and many others, with or without this certification, are practicing patient advocacy. I'm not so much a big fan of the letters that come behind somebody's name or their credentials as I am for, first of all, high ethics and integrity, and secondly, finding the best person for the job. So don't get all hung up on credentials. I don't. And while I do note the credentials, I'm really looking at experience, the integrity, and who can best serve. Now that's an important phrase to me, best serve, and you will hear and see me emphasize that a lot. That brings us to the present day. We're still a young industry compared to other healthcare professions. But here's where I might start to invite folks into this fast-growing world. So let's continue. And as we do, if you're thinking about how yourself, you may be thinking about how yourself could join and serve. So we have a lesson, a blessing, and we have an internal challenge in an industry that began largely as nurses and social workers. We do remain largely that. But to our ranks, we've added physicians and PAs, physician's assistants, and NPs, nurse practitioners. Pharmacists, attorneys, paralegals have all joined the ranks. And there's a really good segment coming up here. Insurance professionals, you know, those folks that can untangle your medical billing disputes and appeals. Like any other industry, we as patient advocates will specialize or niche. Our skills and experience may lend themselves to benefit a particular population. It's what we're good at or known for or what we're being called to do. For example, many of us, myself included, are heavily in elder care. You know, since the 14-year baby boomer demographic is right in the middle of their advance into senior citizenship, that's what's presenting. You'll see folks that will take their specialty further by serving both older adults and adult children or the adult loved ones. Now, there's two populations right there. And by being, say, a patient advocate who's also specializing in dementia care. And then there's the cancer arena with everything from early diagnosis to the specific types of cancer, understanding treatment options, other chronic conditions or multiples of chronic conditions can present an opportunity for specialty. You can bet if it's needed, somebody's going to come along and work on remedy. I'm proud to think pediatric advocacy or mental health or serving developmental disabilities. You've likely heard of birth doulas. Here come patient advocates specializing in end-of-life care. At times, our specialties also combine or touch. For example, think about planning for elder care when there's an adult child with a developmental disability who will now outlive their aging parents. That was not always the case in our history, but it requires special planning and special care, two generations, two populations. There's lots of opportunities in patient advocacy and in our growing profession, although it's primary, the patient advocacy function itself, one-to-one or one-to-many, it's not the only thing. There's tremendous calls for healthcare education. We've had patient advocates become enlisted to be the face of or the voice of or the spokesperson for a particular disease or challenge. We have needs for legislative advocacy. How about train the trainer advocacy? All kinds of advocacy in many forms. Our industry demands a lot of us in terms of the industry itself and in terms of this growth that's happening. But for anybody with any interest, let me just say, we need you. There's a place for you here in service, directly or in support capacity. Think about it. We need patient advocates. Yeah. We need educators. Mm-hmm. We also need the people that are developing technology to help us age or move better or be more comfortable in our housing. How about platforms so that we can manage our casework and our operations, the tools that we use? We need massive education about how stuff works and what are options for people's diagnosis, what's the treatment and pathways to get there. We need social media experts so that we can be located and accessed by the general public. We need help with conduit, y'all. We need everybody to be on board, including that very important first voice on the phone that answers, "How may I help you?" You know, we're going to need bookkeepers and administrators extraordinaire to help us keep the operations running smoothly. Keep the doors open for the many. Let us not forget the thought leaders. We need thought leaders too. They're the ones authoring the books and they're posting provocative information online. They guest on radio and TV segments and they sit in front of hospital executives or elected officials to fight for the one and the many. Now, allow me to take a moment to declare where I've been in this massive network of goodness. Folks are telling me they're a little confused regarding my relative changes, that I've been through since the fall of last year, and I'll speak to that. You know, I began as a patient advocate in 2013, and I can honestly tell you that I have never looked back. I have happily and stubbornly and doggedly been a sole practitioner performing what I call kitchen table advocacy, and that is sacrosanct. I've been an adjunct instructor in higher education and writing and delivering coursework. One that comes to mind is A Consumer's Guide to Patient Advocacy. And I've spoken in faith communities, support groups, workshops, and now on the national stage. And here's one for all of our books. I led a small but mighty agency and a heck of a lot of confused and hurting folks and their loved ones through a pandemic, if only in my own small way. I began to coach and mentor inside my own industry. You know, in fact, I declare that to be a new form of advocacy to help the new, the stuck, the stagnant patient advocates find new clients, grow their businesses. Still, more changes were ahead for me, and in late 2022, I closed my agency and I moved. You know, since I've closed my agency and moved to a different state, folks have expressed an interest or lack of clarity into what I do. And so I made a decision to serve in three ways. I'm using what I believe to be are my top skills. The first one, online consulting. I now work online in telehealth fashion to consult with patients and their loved ones across the United States. Primarily, I'm engaged in elder care matters and navigation of our wacky healthcare system, solo aging, and all the how-tos of care management and planning, communicating with your team and loved ones, how stuff works. I want to be a hub of information leading to more. The second thing I do is coaching. A dedicated portion of my work is spent coaching, mentoring, and in support of other patient advocates or professionals in small business healthcare. It made sense to me to try to prepare and fan out some more people to help meet this growing need. You know, one person can only do so much, so let me assist the folks to get them up and running, get them out there serving. The third thing I do is speaking. And it's something that I feel called to do, and that's to educate. Whether I'm knee to knee with you or standing before you in a grand hall or online, I speak publicly at events and conferences nationwide to further the messages of patient advocacy on and timely topics. Things like healthcare navigation. Healthcare navigation. I'm using air quotes as I say the healthcare navigation. That's a fancy way of saying how to understand and make it through a system that's horribly screwed up and not showing any signs of getting any easier. I'm sorry, y'all, but that's the way it is. Don't kill the messenger. But some might say I have job security along those lines. I also speak on communication. I teach communication, and that's an umbrella term for why we do communicate or need to. Or don't, then everything from how to talk to your providers, how to talk to your loved ones, right on down to crafty lead-ins to difficult conversations, hard stuff, tricky stuff, tender stuff, heartfelt stuff. I speak on decision-making, not so much the decision, but how to make it. What are the factors and the impacts, the pros, the cons, how to think about it all and to take action? Instead, let's take, for instance, rather than the topic of aging in place, you'll find me speaking not about the places to age. You'll find me speaking on how to make the decisions about housing that's right for you so that you can plan for the future. How to self-assess. So that you'll know what your fit is and can go find it. What are the angles? What are the options? What are the considerations so that you can become a savvy consumer who goes on to make your best decisions? Lesson, blessing, and your challenge. Seems I've already given you plenty of lesson, and I've touched on my I never looked back blessing. I'm really grateful for all my opportunities. My heart is so full and rich with experiences to have had and ones that I hold, and I can pass them along to the next person that needs help. So there you have it. Lesson, blessing, the world according to Nancy. But now I have a challenge for you. In fact, I brought a set of them. So here goes. First, if you feel you need patient advocacy, call us. Call me. I'll help you get to where you need to be with the advocate that you need, the best fit, the best person to best serve. I'll help you know where to find us. Secondly, if you want to be a patient advocate and work in our industry, talk with some of us. Read about the patient advocate certification. Talk with us. You know, we have search by zip codes directories that will help you find us, and I'll post those below this video. Thirdly, and I'm about to get as serious right now as you will ever hear or see me. You've likely heard this kind of question before. Is your job one that you would do even if you weren't getting paid? If no is your answer, then you might want to consider a change. Begin to ask yourself, what are your talents? How have your experiences molded you, prepared you to help another? As I'm famous for saying, or maybe famous for making it the title of a blog, I'm a sum of my parts. Are you? I challenge you to think about, what is your purpose? Why are you here? And what are you doing about it? Where is your heart? Just as important, is it in keeping with how you're living your life? Now, I want to close by thanking all of you for my lessons and my blessings, because all of you are that to me. Thanks, everybody.